Forever Dog.
Rose and Jamie are two best friends,
and they love Sex and the City.
And they couldn't help but wonder,
do you love it too?
Carrie,
Miranda,
Samantha,
Charlotte,
Cosmos,
Emotions,
Frenchies,
dudes.
So many dudes.
Every little dude.
All the dudes.
And we couldn't help but wonder.
With Jamie Lee
and Rose Cerno.
I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
And this is
Couldn't Help But Wonder. A podcast where we talk about Sex and the City and how it relates
to us. Oh my God, we're here. We're doing it.
This is big.
This is our classic bridge episode, is what we call it, between seasons. We are now between seasons 5 and 6. We are trucking right along, and
it's
we have a big deal. It's a big damn deal.
It's a
goddamn dang big deal. I can't talk.
It's a dingle dang big deal. Yes.
So we have a fabulous guest with us today, and I'm just really excited to have her. She's a fellow writer on Ted Lasso. She's also written on I Love You America with Sarah Silverman. Is that the right time? Okay, I should just have this in front of me. I'm just winging it.
Just riff, Jamie.
I just start naming shows you haven't been on. But she also wrote on Dear White People, and she's just like a comedy genius and a really delightful human being all around. And we're so excited to have her. Leanne Bowen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be on this. I'm so happy you asked me. I didn't want to say, like, I watched Sex and the City religiously like 10 years ago. Like, I had a box set, and we would just like have me and my roommate would just like drink wine, and I didn't want to say anything, but I am so glad you asked me.
Oh my God. That's why you are the perfect guest. Well, also you're a comedy writer, and we talk about comedy writing a pretty good amount on the show. Cool. But also, yeah, I love that you had the box set. Rose, you didn't have the box set, right? Or did you?
You know what? I always really enjoyed the show, but I have not seen every episode a million times. I don't remember what happens to Burger. So I'm sort of
That's why this is exciting for you.
Ooh. No, I love it. And I have to say that we're really glad to have you right now, because season 5, we've talked about it a lot. We're glad to have you here to discuss it. I don't know how fresh the whole series is in your mind, but season 5 gets really dark and real. It's the first time Carrie is cynical. You know, she's single really for the first time. And, you know, it launches us into the very last season, which is just like so many highs and lows and so dramatic. So the end of season 5 is like really intense, I feel like.
Yeah, it's really intense. And really quick before we jump into all of our Sex and the City goodness, should we say who we were this week?
Oh, I would love to. Nice.
Okay. Well, Leanne, do you want to kick us off and say who you were this week and why?
I know exactly who I was this week. I was Miranda.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So I was super judgmental all week. I was very negative. I feel like if there's ever a scene, like the naysayer in a scene would be Miranda to say no.
Oh, it is always
definitely.
And then like me and DJ, my fiance, were kind of like fighting all week, and then we have a baby in the middle of it. Mm. So I like for sure, especially in season 5 too.
Yeah, because it's like the Miranda Steve Brady triangle.
Yeah, it's the triangle. Yeah. Exactly. And so that's who I felt like this week.
Why were you so judgmental this week? Were you just exhausted and COVID?
Exhausted, COVID. I have cabin fever. I just started my period.
Oh my God.
I'm at the end of mine. So okay. Yeah. Can I just say everyone I've talked to are you on your period right now, Rose?
No, you would know. I would be like, okay, hysterically screaming.
Well, you are not. I've synced up with a lot of people. So yeah, it's funny that people are syncing up through Zoom is my only point.
Okay, wait, how gross can we get? Can we get a little gross here or not?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Okay, I don't know about you guys, but my period is like 70 buckets of blood. Like, I can't believe I don't die every month. Like, the last time I had my period, I had to stand up
buckets
to take out.
It's
like crazy that I can live through it. I took out my tampon standing up because my back hurt too much to sit down. Yeah. And when I took out the tampon, like a wash of blood, like hit the wall.
Did it
like
splatter? It was there blood splatter like the staircase?
It looked like I killed someone. And I was dealing with my back, so I couldn't clean the bathroom. So I had to ask the woman, the incredibly kind woman who cleans my mom's house, to clean the bathroom. And then I took a shower and I did it again. So she had to do it twice in one day. So.
Oh, no.
Buckets of Blood is, I mean, that's the name of your punk band that you're starting when your back's better.
Oh, my God. You're so right. Yeah, before I was a TV writer, I was the lead thrasher of Buckets of Blood. So, Leanne, no wonder you were a goddamn bitch. You had your period.
Yeah, I had my period. I think that was like 80% of it. Yeah. And we're sleep deprived. So,
I mean,
it's just like it got dark. So yeah. I was Miranda.
That's fair.
But I think we're out of it. We recently started working. Like, we bought a Peloton, which we're very excited about. Oh, nice.
Amazing.
Yeah. So this is day two of working out, and immediately I feel like
it changes everything.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah. 100%.
What about battling cabin fever, Leanne? Are you taking any walks or going on any like little outings?
Yeah. So we recently went to the park with the baby, and we were there for like 20 minutes. And then we went to
amazing, very sexy. So basically you had a whole day. You made a day of it.
Yeah. And we went, we went to Santa Monica to the pier on Monday, and we were there for 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. I thought that was going to be like the highlight. Like, but we did go to Santa Monica 15 minutes. Okay. We popped into Santa Monica. We popped out.
Is she too small to be out and about for a while?
Yeah, like her time between naps is about an hour to an hour and a half. So like getting out of the car, walking down the pier, getting down
there. It's like such a schlep.
It's a schlep.
It's a 3-hour ordeal to go there for 20 minutes.
Yeah, it is. And like the nice part was driving down there, I think, because we just haven't been driving in a car for a while. We stupidly, for some reason, brought the stroller, and I was like, we got to go to the water. And so DJ had to pick up the stroller in two hands and walk through the sand. It was like,
oh my God.
You guys were just like crying so tired.
It was stupid. It was so dumb.
It's amazing that anyone ever has children.
It's incredible,
honestly.
Isn't it?
It is. And I knew it was really hard, but you don't know until
I know.
I might just slowly age myself out of the game. I think I'm sort of dangerously tipping towards that. Oh, no, I forgot.
Oops, I forgot to have kids.
Uh-oh, everything inside of me is dry. Oh, well, now I'll just drink and spend money.
But I have a question, though. Okay, sure. For our listeners, I am not just saying this because you're a friend and a colleague. Your baby is next level adorable. Aww. It's crazy how cute your kid is. Do you feel like that helps in those moments of despair where you're like, oh, but her face is so cute. You just want to eat it.
Yeah, I think when she's... when she's really cute and smiling, I mean, I'm in love. I'm in love with her, like super hard.
When did you know you were in love with her? I'm just kidding.
That's a great question. I love talking about these things of like the people who are on the other side of having kids. Like, tell us people who don't have them. Like, what is it like?
Oh, I think I had a C-section and I was awake. And then right after they pulled her out, they like wrapped her in a little blanket and they like put her on my chest. And soon as I saw her alive, I was just like, I love you.
You were awake for the C-section. Is that normal?
I think so.
You don't have to watch it, do you?
No, but it's fucking wild. Like,
but it's fast, right? I heard a podcast recently where they were like, it happens like in 15 minutes.
15 minutes. Yeah.
They have a curtain in front of you.
They have a curtain in front of you, and then as soon as the baby's out, they like remove part of the curtain so it's plastic, so you could see the doctor hold the baby up, and then she like she shook it in front of me, and I was like, "Go clean it," and then bring it back.
Gross. Bring her back.
Oh my God! Wow, that's so you can't feel anything, obviously, right?
No, you can't. Yeah, you can. You can't feel pain, but the incision is like maybe like a good 5 or 6 inches.
She's doing a huge
amount. So they
have to
pull and twist the baby out. They're pushing down on the top of your stomach. And I was like I was rocking on the table.
Oh my God. Jamie and I are about to both absolutely throw up.
We're like seasick. No, this is incredible.
I feel like I just had one.
Well, also, I know that honestly, you took us through it. I'm like pretty sure I just had a baby in watching that.
It's almost too accurate, some might say.
No, that was that's incredible though, because you always hear, I feel like what people always say is they go, it doesn't hurt, but you feel pressure. It's always like, what does that mean? Like feeling pressure could mean not a big deal or a huge deal.
It feels like if someone just took their fists and then dug and then just pressed on the top of your stomach hard.
Yeah. So it wasn't painful, but it was just like jarring.
It's extremely jarring. I was like kind of relieved while it was happening because I have a very low blood pressure. So I was puking through it. And they gave me a bunch of medicine and I was just happy to not be puking. So So when it actually happened, I felt like this, I felt relieved because I had been puking the whole time.
Wow. Yeah. You're a hero, man. I don't know.
It's intense.
Anyone who has a kid deserves a Nobel Peace Prize.
I know, Mother's Day is not enough time. It should be honor women
Mother's Month
all year, literally every day, except on other holidays.
Except on other holidays.
But all of the non-holidays are Mother's Days.
That makes sense.
Man. Okay. Well,
Jamie,
Rose.
Who are you this week?
Oh, me? Oh, me? I guess I was, you know what? I'm going to say I was a bit of a Brady because, I think Brady's too young to have seen this movie, but I kind of just felt like a kid again. Because my very favorite movie when I was a kid was The Witches, and they
it's amazing.
Released the Anne Hathaway version, on HBO Max. And it's like the updated whatever. So
how can you update a perfect movie?
That's the thing.
The original was exceptional.
It's so exceptional and truly terrifying. I'm sure you guys have this too, but in my family or in everyone's family, there are those little stories that just keep coming back up. No matter how old you are, they'll be like, I remember that time. Well, one of them in my family is when I went to see The Witches in the theater. I got so scared that I screamed in the theater and threw the popcorn bucket all over myself. And my parents think it's the funniest thing ever. But that movie was so scary, but also so cool that
it's
creative. Marketed towards kids. And obviously it's a Roald Dahl book or whatever.
I love Roald Dahl.
Yeah, but it was a horror movie for children, which is not a genre.
You're right.
They
That's
don't
a really
make
good point.
Horror for kids.
That's
really.
That's a really, really, really clever point.
I was looking into it because I love the original and I was oh God, will this live up to it? And so I watched the old trailer and it was Angelica Houston and she's brilliant. But it was Jim Henson that did all the puppetry. Mm-hmm. And did he do The Labyrinth too?
Yes.
No? Yeah.
So I guess he gets
and Dark Crystal. She kind of looks Dark Crystal-y in that movie. Yeah.
I just didn't want to see the new one because I'm like, there's no, how was it, Jamie? I mean, is it good?
Yeah. Well, I haven't finished it. I stopped I stopped it before we recorded. So I'm about halfway through. It's really good. I mean, it's just such a good story and they did enough updates to where you're like, oh, it's not fully the original. There's definitely something to sink your teeth into. Mm-hmm. That's new, but also there's certain things where you're like, God, the original just fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys knew this. I feel like this is kind of obvious trivia with if you've read anything about it, but when they did the original, all of the bald people in the audience are mostly men. They just cast bald men and put them in dresses. And if you go and watch it, it looks so bad. It's crazy how bad it's very lazy. But I did notice in this one, they definitely, there's way more CGI and it's just a lot sleeker and slicker. But I did notice a man in the audience and I think they did that to almost as an homage to the original.
Best scariest part of that was when somebody got trapped in a painting.
I agree.
That's
they
so
don't
clever.
Have that in this one.
That's
they,
so clever.
Something else happens to the little girl. But yeah, that was the fucking scariest thing I ever saw. They're like, Erica disappeared. And then one day she was hanging over the mantle and then she aged in the painting and then died.
It's amazing.
It was so scary. The original is so scary.
That's so true.
Anyways, who are you this week, Rose?
I would say I would say I'm a Miranda because I got back surgery on Monday and I think it was really successful. But since this is the second one in 2 months, my mom keeps being like, oh my God, this is so amazing. You don't pain anymore. But I keep telling her that I'm cautiously optimistic because it was 2 months after the first one before I needed a second one. And it's only been a handful of days. So I'm glad. I think the surgery went as great as it could have gone. And I'm doing so much better, but I'm not like celebrating yet. I feel like in 3 months, I can tell you that I'm really, so that kind of feels like a Miranda thing for someone to be like, oh my God, are you excited about this? And she's like,
she's like, pump the brakes.
I will be. Yeah. I mean, it's totally. All going in the right direction, but I'm very jinxy and very paranoid. I know what I mean.
How did you feel about going into a hospital like during COVID?
Fine. I mean, I've had to go so many times. I mean, you have to be, they're all in PPE. Fine. It's like the safest place to be. You have to get tested to even be there. Like you can't get the surgery without the negative test. So also the back pain is so bad that it kind of was just such an emergency that I didn't even think about anything else. How did you feel about being in a hospital?
I was okay. I mean, I was nervous, but then after I had the kid, I kept forgetting to put my mask on. And I think all the nurses were so nice. They didn't like say, hey, your mask isn't on. But I remember being wheeled through the hospital and I'm like, everyone here's a hero. Like all of you. They're all so kind and nice. Like, how you doing?
Nurses
like,
are incredible.
I'd be on a gurney.
They're incredible. They really do like change your day and your life. And they like give you hope. Yeah, they're amazing.
Actually, I have to say that when I woke up from my, when I woke up from my anesthesia and the surgery, before I went down, this male nurse was, I'm so sorry. This is like really boring. It doesn't actually matter. But when I woke up from the surgery out of my anesthesia, there was a male nurse who was chatting with me and he wasn't wearing his mask. And I wasn't wearing my mask because I was just waking up from anesthesia. And then we were chatting for a little bit and he like wasn't that far away from me. And finally I was like, can you like wear your mask? And I put mine on too, because I was like, I'm not really trying to have this like maskless chat with you right now. I don't know. I think I was the last surgery of the day. There was nobody around. I think he was just trying to like cut loose. And I was like, I don't really like want to cut loose with you, bud. It's almost
5 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's 5 o'clock. It's maskless 5 o'clock somewhere.
No, I was like, I'm going to tell on you. So please.
Yeah, no. When I was getting like there in taking me, there was a nurse that walked in and he was just doing stuff on the computer, but his mask was right under his nose.
No.
And I'm just like, you went to school.
You're in a goddamn hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the very beginning of the quarantine, I will never forget. It was like maybe 3 weeks in. And the coffee place near me, they had a really good system where you could like get coffee outside. And I was like, okay, this is like my one venture out. I'm going to go to the coffee place. And there was a group of nurses who were not wearing masks, all huddled up, getting really close to the barista or the person like taking the credit cards. And we were, I've gone to this place for years, ever since I moved here pretty much. And so I know all the people who work there. So she was like giving me eyes, like, that's, I'm really crazy, uncomfortable. And then she just straight up was like, can you guys step back? Like, she was like, this is so inappropriate. Totally. It was like October behavior in June. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or like in
October
May.
October behavior. I love that.
Well, it was just like a little loosey goosey. And I remember, but they were nurses. And I was like, you of all people should know better.
Do you guys feel like sometimes I scroll on Instagram and I'm seeing people who are taking recent pictures and they're at parties or like big, long dinners at like a long outdoor dinner table and everyone's sitting next to each other and no one's wearing masks. And I'm like, what is going on here?
Oh my God. So I was going to get a night nanny last week just because I wanted some sleep. And it took me a few weeks to talk myself into it. And we were worried about COVID. And I got a reference for one and she was great. I talked to her on the phone. She was like, don't worry, I'll wear a mask the whole time. I've been super safe. And I was like, cool. I was like, let me do a little more digging. Uh-huh. And she linked her Instagram to her post, her nanny site. And I clicked on that. She was having drinks, like 4 or 5 people deep, going to little parties, and I immediately canceled.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's so stupid that she put her Instagram on there.
She was so dumb. It must have been up from like pre-COVID and she
But I'm seeing people go to weddings and they're just like mostly not wearing masks. And I'm like, just because someone's your friend or family doesn't mean they don't have it. It's bizarre.
It is bizarre. Yeah. And I mean, I guess people are starting to be like, well, if it's outside, it's okay. But then it's like, well, when you're sitting at a table with that many people and you're right next to each other. Yeah, it's like, guys, that's not social distancing.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to tell you about episode 292 of Office Hours Live with our special guest documentary filmmaker Lance Oppenheim and musical guests Melinda Sullivan and Larry Goldings. You can find us on your podcast app of choice. Goodbye.
And at YouTube.com.
And at YouTube.com/goodbye.
/Office Hours Live.
Okay, well, I'm feeling great. I'm loving this chat so far. Let's dig a little deeper and get into our season 5 wrap-up. Leanne, can you actually, before we get into it, will you just like tell us a little bit about like how you got into TV writing and comedy?
Yes, love that.
Let's see. So I went to film school and I wanted to do documentaries. I wanted to direct documentaries. I know. Crazy, right?
Where'd you go to film school, Leanne?
Well, I went to, it's a joke I say, I went to the Art Institute in Santa Monica and it's a for-profit college. There's like 40 across the country.
Oh, wow.
It's like the ITT Tech of video.
You're
production.
So funny.
But I just, I managed to get something out of it. But hell, I guess the only reason I'm probably writing is because I took classes at UCB and I kind of joined the community there and I met a lot of people. And, you know, I got hired at Funny or Die by someone who, Dave Ferguson, who's like a UCB guy. And then that's how I got in the.
How did you decide to do, what brought you to UCB? It's interesting, Leanne. I can tell you're hilarious, but you have a very. Like low key. I mean, I've known you for 5 seconds,
super low key.
But I love funny people that are low key. It's such a nice surprise.
Oh, thank you.
It's truly
heaven.
Yeah.
So I've always been a writer. And so I saw that UCB had sketch writing classes and I was like, I was actually going through a really dark period of my life. And a friend was like, read this book called Truth in Comedy. I had no idea what improv was. I read it and like, I couldn't grasp. That book is basically written by, I think, Second City people about like how to approach improv. And I wrote it and like, this is insane. Like, I don't know what any of this means. And it was just like a weird suggestion. And I guess it was to get me out of my rut. But that pointed me towards, what is improv? And I was like, I looked at UCB's website. I saw that there were sketch classes. I was like, well, I'm a writer. I love comedy. And so I got into sketch writing. And I actually hadn't seen a live improv show until after I took the sketch class. And I was just like, what the hell is that? Like, they're making this up on the spot. I know this sounds crazy. Oh, God.
No, it doesn't.
That's kind of embarrassing.
No.
Dan came up through the UCB and he still talks about how like he's like when improv is good, it truly blows your mind.
That was amazing.
And that was what got me out of this rut I was in. I was like, well, I just want to challenge myself and make myself super uncomfortable. So I did that. I did stand up for a while. I was doing open mics, like, which was the most terrifying thing I've ever put myself through.
Did you do that here in LA?
Yeah, I did in LA.
And LA open mics are.
It's a dark place.
They are dark.
Were they never not dark? I thought they were dark in New York too.
So one time I was at an open mic and I was sitting in the front row and this guy told a joke about killing his grandmother. And the look on my face was just like, I was like, I'm not gonna laugh. And then I was last on the list, but he hung around. And then right before I went up, he walked up to my table and dropped a piece of paper on my table. And I opened it up and it was a picture of, he drew a dick and just like dropped it on my table.
Oh my God.
And then he left. And I was like, and immediately that just knocked the wind out of me. Like, it was stupid, but it just.
It was an original dick pic.
Yeah.
It was a hand-drawn.
That's what I did. I went up. I was like, hey, guys. That was exactly what I said. Guys, I got my first dick pic, and I showed the audience, and then I got a call.
Honestly, I did not know where that story was going, and I was like, oh, my God, if this guy just drops his phone number on the table. You're like, and that's how I met DJ, my fiancé.
He's like, oh, yeah, she hates killing grandmothers.
I love how she hates me.
I love how she hates me. I love this energy.
Wait, Leanne, I have two nosy questions.
Yeah.
One, what kind of writing were you doing before? Because you were like, I was always a writer. So is that like journals, poetry? And two, if you're comfortable, what was the rut that you were in and why were you feeling so funky?
Oh boy. So I wrote, I'd write a lot of short stories and I was in the middle of writing a novel.
Wow.
And then I went to film school because I wanted to get in documentary filmmaking. I'm pretty like politically like, I guess, active, you would say. And then at school, we had a narrative writing class where I'd write a bunch of shorts. And I just, every narrative I wrote, like, turned into a comedy. I couldn't help it. And I have this like dark sort of sensibility about myself, I think. So my teacher was like, this is really funny. Like, you should definitely get into comedy writing. And that kind of pointed me sort of in that direction. And then the rut I was in, I had like a nervous breakdown at like 21.
I've had one of those, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like slightly agoraphobic. Like, I just didn't like leaving my house. This is like really deep.
Oh, we get into it on this podcast.
This is the pod.
Like, yeah, this is, we said, Rose said in our last episode, she goes, this isn't just a podcast, this is a life podcast.
And
I'm like, that's so true. This is a life podcast.
It's like not really a TV recap podcast. It's like, that's like the mac and cheese that lures you into the vegetable palace. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're trying to say. The vegetables that you put in the brownie so the kids don't realize they're eating vegetables.
Yes, exactly.
Brownie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that like breakdown was sort of like, I was just partying and doing a bunch of drugs and I was moving like 1,000 miles a minute. And it just like all caught up with me. And I just had this like crazy like breakdown. And then so I had been in a rut for a few years and I was still going to school. I was still working. And I just had a friend who was like, hey, you got to read this book. And I was like, an improv book.
Wow, that's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Was your friend a comedy writer that told you to read it?
He was an actor and an improviser. And it literally did change my life. Like, it kind of set me on my path. So I guess he was right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And what was your dream like? Like, your dream was at one point to write, to make documentaries. Was there a certain documentary you saw growing up where you're like, this is what I want to do kind of thing?
No, actually, no. I think, I don't know, like, my dad was a community organizer and he like worked politically in a lot of things. And my mom was politically active. And so I was just like, I want to do that too. So it was either journalism or investigative. And like, I was like, I guess I kind of want to like make movies about these issues. So yeah, I was just kind of putting a bunch of things together.
Once you started like getting really into comedy and improv, once it kind of dawned on you that you would enjoy being a comedy writer, was there any kind of show or movie where you're like, this is the kind of stuff that I would love to be involved in? Like, did you see anything that was like, I recognize myself in that?
Oh yeah. So like growing up, I was a huge fan of comedy, like Mel Brooks, you know, I loved Blazing Saddles and like Spaceballs, and I really loved Airplane, and I loved like Kentucky Fried
movie.
I don't know if you remember that movie.
Yeah, amazing.
That's an insane movie. So I just never like
put it together
that I could have a career in it. Yeah. And so like I've seen every episode of The Simpsons, and I was like a latchkey kid. So I've watched probably every cartoon that came out in the 90s. And I was just like, I just ingested a lot of TV and comedy, and
that's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you think, parlaying into the theme of our podcast that we will get to, how did you feel like now as a comedy writer, how do you feel about Sex and the City? Like, what's your, how did it, I guess this is a very broad question, but just like, what was it like when you first saw it and how do you feel about it now?
I thought it was brilliant when I first saw it. I remember, I just thought it was so relatable, like as a woman in my early 20s dating. I thought it was really funny. I thought it was brilliant. I just loved it. And like, you know, me and my girlfriends would pick who we were and who we felt more like. And then like, I think I like opened up a little more sexually because of watching
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
You know, like, I need to live my, yeah.
That's awesome.
It really influenced me to like live my best life in a sense. And then thinking back as a TV writer, I'm like, oh, some things were like kind of cheesy. Some episodes were good and some weren't great. Some of the storylines were a little insane. And then yes. The episode I watched last night, a lot of it was like...
You watched the season finale, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you watched... I love a charade.
I love that episode.
Okay. So you watched, the Hamptons episode.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What'd you think, Leanne?
I loved it. I still loved it. I thought it was great. DJ, who watched it with me, had never seen an episode. And I think... Yeah. And I was like, what do you think? And in the back of his mind, I think he always thought it was like a joke. And then he's a TV writer, too. And as he's watching, he's like, that was funny. That was funny. Oh, that was good. That was funny.
It's a great show. It.
Yeah. He was pleasantly surprised. Yeah.
It's the idea that like straight men can't enjoy it is just such toxic masculinity. It's such a skilled, the writers in that room were so skilled and they're so talented. It's just it's so sad that it has to be not taken seriously as an excellent television show just because it happens to be about women and women responded
so much to it. I think that men were just like, oh, it can't be good because like the chicks are going crazy over this thing. And you're like, how is it? We're going crazy over it because it's fucking amazing.
It's so good.
Well,
it's
misogyny dictates that anything that women like are into is inferior and bad. So if women are into it, then it's not good.
It's so sad. There's a lot of shows like that. I mean, it's crazy too, because it's like, okay, also, it's not like it was on like, you know, the CW or something. It's like, it was on fucking HBO for a reason. Like, it was a cutting edge show.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really wild.
It's so funny. You were talking earlier about how this season was darker and deeper. And I was, because I looked up the Wikipedia page for this season, and it's the first... You guys have probably already talked about this.
Go ahead, jump in, Leanne.
But,
oh, yeah, give it to us.
It's the first season they shot after 9/11.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no,
and,
I know that?
sorry. We talked about that a couple of times, yeah.
I thought season 4 was the first one after 9/11. Season 5 is?
Season 5 is the first one shot after 9/11, but season 4 has...
The first one shot after 9/11.
Has episodes that aired after. So there are like some things that are changed in season 4, like digitally. Like they also changed the...
I see.
They changed the theme in season 4 because the Twin Towers used to be in the opening credits.
That's right, it was. I remember that shot.
Yeah, now it switches to the Empire State Building after 9/11.
Wait, Leanne, I'm so glad you're bringing this up because I know, obviously we had touched on it and
like,
sort
I've
of forgotten apparently,
before.
but it's such a good point to bring up because we've been talking about how dark this season was and it is interesting that like, they were working on this after 9/11. Like it definitely impacted the tone of the show, I think. Yeah. What do you think, Rose?
That's really interesting. I mean, 9/11 was... such a huge deal, especially for New Yorkers. I moved to New York after 9/11. Wait a minute. Yeah, way after 9/11. So I didn't experience it. I'm sure for people that lived there and were making TV there and writing there and performing there, it must have been absolutely devastating. And that makes sense to me that something that shook the city would affect the show. But there's another part of me that just feels like
it just synced up.
They
had
4 seasons of Carrie nonstop dating, always falling in love, just partying and wearing fabulous outfits. And I thought that this season was, you wouldn't want the show to be like this the whole time, but this is the first season where she's like, maybe I will die alone. I don't know. It was the first season she was too jaded to date. It was the first season that she was kind of bitchy. She kind of resembled Miranda in a bunch of episodes.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting and I liked it because in general, she's so bubbly and she's just gallivanting. It was nice to see a real moment of like, does her dating ever catch up with her? Does her just running away from herself ever catch up with her? And it felt like in season 5, it kind of did, which I liked. And I don't know why they did that, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like we've talked about this a little bit, Leanne, but like when Brady is brought into the equation, we were like, we just feel like we feel like they're so not kind to Miranda and like acknowledging the fact that she's had a baby. What do you feel about that? And did you pick up on that?
I totally picked up on it, especially this episode when they're having lunch at that outdoor, like on a table.
Oh my God,
and Samantha looks at the baby and is like, that baby is not coming. That baby ruined my lunch. He's not ruining my party. And DJ just gasped. And I was like, yeah, that's how bitches are. And it's just like, I thought it was a little refreshing to not see women just like goo goo ga 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 over babies. However, you know, women do, and like they should, because babies are adorable. But I just thought it was kind of cool to just have like, not like, I don't know, just to break that.
That's the thing. Ideal. That's the thing about the show.
It was insane.
It is insane. But also, yeah. What were you going to say, Rose?
No, it's an insane reaction, because we're thinking, no matter who, you know, we have friends that don't want kids, who have no interest in kids. And, you know, so Jamie and I have a friend, Allison Leiby, reminds me of the kind of person that would kind of be like, can you just move the kid? Like, I love Allison, but she's so uninterested. She's a very Samantha Jones about kids. But even people like that, they still have manners, and they still like just the absolute no manners part of it. But I do think that, to your point, Leanne, everything about Sex and the City is kind of, as much as people like to say it's a basic bitch show, it actually isn't. It's kind of turned on its head, because it's about women in their late 30s who are unmarried, who friendship is the most important thing to them. The career is the most important thing to them. They're totally guy crazy. But as much as they talk about wanting to be with a partner, other than Charlotte, they all put their other things ahead of it. And so it's kind of like, even though it's very rude behavior, it's kind of thinking of all the representations of women and babies. It's kind of a refreshing.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what episode it was, but do you remember the episode where Carrie had to buy a baby shower gift for someone?
Yes, it's coming up in season 6. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. But okay, you can talk about it. You can talk about it.
That really changed. That was really a big episode for me, because she was like, I buy a baby shower gift for everyone. I buy a wedding gift, and you're just constantly purchasing gifts for these people that have these happy life events. And I was like, that's so true. Like, single people don't have, like, just give a single person a gift, or I don't know. Yeah, I love that moment.
Give a single person a gift. Huge. I think as a single person, I think that's true, Leanne. I think you're onto something. Give me a fucking gift. I'm just sitting here dating. Give me a damn gift.
It is so that I skipped ahead a little bit, and I just rewatched that episode this past week, and I was like, this episode, this is like, this show, it just breaks boundaries. Like, the fact that they even commented on, like, you end up buying, like, if you've gotten married or had a baby, like, people are spending thousands of dollars on you at a certain point, depending on how long you've known them.
And it's like, you're the one who's in a 2-income household.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just like, okay, like, why? Yeah, why can you not? Why? You know,
I felt that way.
She was like, I'm getting married to myself.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt that way during my I had a baby registry. And I was reluctant to share it, because, like, you know, I'm a TV writer and I make good money. I can afford to feed, like, clothe and give my kids gifts. And I feel bad, like, people are like, oh, what's your registry? Let me buy you something. And I feel bad for friends who are like,
you felt so bad, but you actually sent it, so you didn't feel that bad.
No, I didn't. I didn't send it to any of my friends.
You didn't?
Really?
I did not.
No, that's a cool move.
Yeah. My family sent it out to everyone. And then finally, my mother-in-law to be was like, you need to have a shower. And so I was like, okay, fine, we'll have a shower. And I put the registry. It was a little hidden in the invitation, but I don't know. I didn't feel great about it. And then I didn't even know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
I felt that way with my wedding registry a little bit, where I was just kind of like, well, wedding registries are a little different, because at least with registries, it's like, okay, I actually need some of this shit. So can somebody please buy the shit for me? Because, like, some of this stuff where, like, I'm going to need, and I'm sure you get plenty of duplicates and things that you're like, oh, this is just going to, like, clutter up my house. But, like, with a wedding registry, it's so fucking weird, because you're like,
a tiny spoon.
I've never, like, taken inventory of my kitchen and been like, what am I lacking?
It's so,
like,
domestic.
It's just not where my head's at. But then people start buying you stuff and you're like, oh shit, I actually already had that. Like, I registered for it just, like, lazily, but I'm like, shit, I had, like, plenty of frying pans. Like, I did not need this, but I could have used, like, a fucking cheese grater, and I don't have one now. So point is, if you are doing a registry, take a minute and, like, figure it out, because even if you don't care right now, you might end up caring when you have, like, 40 of one thing and then zero of
if you're a home chef. It seems like marriage is quite the ticket.
Oh, seriously.
Yeah.
You get all your supplies for free. If you just get married, all of your supplies for free.
That's a good perk. Leanne, let me ask you something. Back when you watched the show the first time around, was there a character that you identified with? And is it the same character that you would identify with now?
I think I identified with Carrie, and I think it's only because she was a writer. But also, she's the only one who had inner monologue. I just felt closer to her because we could hear her inner monologue.
Yeah.
Everything.
Oh my God. That's a really good point. She's kind of like a podcast.
Yeah.
How do you feel now, Leanne, watching? Do you still feel like she's the one that kind of you click with most?
I think everyone is supposed to see a little bit of themselves in each one of them. And yeah. I think that's what I feel.
You're a Carrie with a Miranda moon rising.
They're stars that make up a galaxy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I feel like I'm a Carrie. Yeah. With a Miranda moon rising. I think that's it. And then maybe a tiny bit of Charlotte because I really wanted to have a kid and be married. So
can you tell us your falling in love story since this is a rom-com show? Can you tell us your rom-com? Yeah.
That's a great question. I love that.
Yeah, sure. So DJ was the script coordinator on Dear White People.
Okay.
And he was dating someone at the time.
Did you, the second you laid eyes on him, were you like, bam, bam, bam?
No.
If you will.
It was actually really funny. I didn't even notice he was in the room.
Okay.
And the showrunner's like, Leah, we have a new script coordinator. I was like, I know. And DJ was like, hey, we took an improv class together. And I didn't remember
him. Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah, man,
it's cold.
It was the rudest.
Brutal.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him in the room.
Do you have face blindness, Leanne?
I do.
Do you know that that's Jamie from the job that you have right above you? That's Jamie, your colleague.
Oh shit! Oh my God, that's Jamie.
Yeah, that's Jamie
from Ted Lasso. Jamie
from earlier today. Okay, so you have face blindness. He's like, we took an improv class together. You had no memory of it.
I was like, I don't remember.
Okay,
he actually dropped my name to get hired too, and then I was like, cool, great.
Oh my God, Leanne.
Okay,
this is incredible. Okay, so tell me more. Tell me when it becomes a little steamy.
He was dating someone seriously. They were living together. And I think him dating someone, my brain was like, oh, he's off limits. So I can like be friends and get to know him really well. And just like we became like really buddy buddy. And then halfway through the season, I started to like him. And then
did everyone in the room know that there was like a tension?
Great question.
Yes. Okay. So after we started dating, my showrunner was like, I knew it. I was just like, you guys, I knew it. I could feel it. I could sense it. And she was like, when are you guys getting married? And it ended up, we like got engaged like a year and a half after we started dating.
Wait, so when did he dump the broad for you?
Oh my God. Okay. So
give us the juice, girl.
Oh God. So we ask all the
hard hitting questions here at CHPW.
He left the show mid-season because he got staffed on another show. So, and so we just parted ways. Like we didn't.
What show did he go to? I need to know.
Mm-hmm. Atypical.
Okay. I love that show. Actually,
she loves that show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
I love Atypical.
And he was off my radar. I was actually like, I got super interested in someone else. I dated someone else and I got super interested in someone else. I was kind of like digging someone else when I was driving home and I saw him walking down the street with his boss. And like I was driving, I like whipped my car over.
God.
Almost his boss made a joke that I almost ran them over. I stopped. I rolled down the window. God. I was like, hey, DJ. And he was like, hey, hi. Oh, and he's like, I was like, what are you doing here? I live here. And he was like, yeah, I work Sunset Bronson. I work right here. I was like, cool. Okay, bye. And I left. And the story is, as soon as I drove away, his boss was like, she likes you. Oh, and it just so happened he broke up with his girlfriend 3 days earlier.
Oh my God.
So then what happened?
I know. So he texts me that night. That night he texts me. He's like, hey, just want to catch up, see how you're doing. I was like, hey, man, it's good to see you. Blah, blah, blah. And we're joking around for a bit. And he's like, yeah, me and my ex broke up. And I was like, it honestly didn't cross my mind. I was honestly in like, oh man, I'm so sorry. Cause like I hate breakups and I know how hard they are.
Oh, so you weren't thinking of it in those terms yet. You were just
totally
like,
not 100%
just purely not. Like, okay. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Then what happened?
And then halfway through he's like, yeah, so we should hang out sometime. And I was like, oh, and then it clicked for me.
And then how was the very first date?
It was fine. So, okay. So hold up. So he broke up.
Story.
He was with her for a couple years. He broke up with her on like a Friday, ran into me on like Monday. And then we set a date to hang out later that week. And when he texted, I was like, yeah, let's go get drinks. And so he texts me to get drinks. He's like, yeah, so where do you want to go? We were going to go to, the Paley on Sunset next
right,
to
right.
Oh, uh-huh,
Sheerfish. He's like, yeah, let's just go and get fucked up. And I was like, ew. I was like, no.
It's not romantic. Like, yeah. Not.
And I was like, oh, you're going through something.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, you're like, all right, yeah, you just went through a breakup.
Yeah. So we hung out and we just talked for a bunch about like his breakup and how he's doing, and it was fine. But then we ended up like making out and stuff that night.
Oh, okay, how was the first kiss?
Yeah.
Wait, can I say something really quick?
Yes.
You guys had a similar, like, cause in the season finale, just drawing parallels of season 5, they talk about their exes on their first date. So you had a little bit of a Burger Carry situation.
I did.
Where he kind of like let loose about his ex a little bit.
Cause we were saying that we thought that was really a bad move, but it worked for you guys.
It did. It actually put me off. Like,
it put you off. Okay.
Yeah, it did put me off. Him offering it fucked up, and then it kind of put me off. But we got so drunk that
oh my god, you're like, it's fine, actually. It's fine. It was water under the bridge.
I did like them. We were at a bar and we were like a couple drinks deep, and then we kissed each other, and it was cool because like you know how you're usually like, okay, like, are we gonna like, is this gonna happen?
Yes, blah, blah, blah. But if you're drunk, it just fixes everything. Drunk, Drinking is good, you guys.
It is good.
Like, it is like, it accelerates things sometimes in a good or bad way. And it, but it was cool because like we both leaned, or like solely like at the same time leaned towards each other and kissed. There was no like, oh, he's kissing me, oh, she's kissing me. And like, that was,
it sounds so like meant to be.
I think so. I hope so. I mean, we have a kid, so.
Well, we'll see where it goes.
Well, you guys made a great looking baby. Let's just say that your baby is. Oh, I can't even with this kid.
Oh,
is she around? Can we show her to Rose?
She's sleeping right now.
She's sleeping. Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
he put her down at 5.
Oh, okay. So, okay, we're not waking her.
Maybe
waking
I can her. Drop a picture in the chat. I'll drop.
Okay, that would be great. I just need Rose to get a visual.
Leanne, part of the thing we do on this on this pod of Sex and the City is, you know, we analyze every episode, and we are absolute fans and stans of the show. We love it. But rewatching it in 2020, there are a lot of problems when it comes to diversity, queerness.
Oh, yeah.
It is so blatantly racist. How was your experience watching it as a woman of color?
I think during I didn't know. And I think I was just so desensitized to like
whitewashed.
Yeah, that's just how TV is. Yeah. You're just like I never, like I watched Friends and like it never hit me that there wasn't a black character until Aisha Tyler came on. I was just so used to it. And then the jokes back then, jokes were bad. You know, there's
totally.
a lot. So there's a bad. Period. Yeah. And there's a period when like, you know, people's tweets are getting dug up for shitty jokes. And like, I think back then I was just like, oh, that's just like what comedy is.
Wow.
Like, comedy is like making fun of gay people.
Yeah.
Literally.
Making fun of gay people. That this episode, too. She was just surprised that he was marrying a woman and a lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were saying last episode, like, you know, the whole, like, all of the fodder in this episode is just like, can you believe that gay guy married a woman? And we're like, oh, if this existed now, they'd probably be like, well, maybe he's like pansexual.
Bye.
Or maybe exactly. Or like, maybe they have an arrangement, or like, who knows? It's just, it was very just like, can you believe that he would marry her? Like, which, you know, for a, you know, 22 minute show or whatever it is, 30 minute show, like, you're like, okay, well, maybe you just don't dig that deep, because why take the time exploring that?
Yeah.
Like, there's not enough, you know, this show moves very quick. Like, all of the Michael Patrick King stuff is like, you are in and out of scenes. Like, there is no fat on any scene. It's like, information gets across, move on. Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like maybe if it were written now, they would like take a little more time.
I think so. They'd be thoughtful about it. Because they were very thoughtful about just like relationship stuff and like, and I think that was probably their focus.
Yes.
Also, Nathan Lane was like cartoonishly gay. Like he didn't.
But he kind of is in real life, though. It seems
in real life. Yeah, that's true. But he, yeah, absolutely.
It's very much like his. Skyler? It's very much like the Birdcage. Like it's that.
It
same,
was the Birdcage.
Yeah. It's that character swung in basically to this episode.
Yeah. But also, I will say, like, if they weren't as stereotypical, this is not over most of the episodes, but this one in particular, if they weren't stereotypical up top, then I don't know that they would get that nice payoff at the end when they all kind of are like, oh, like joke's on us. They're in love and like they're getting married and they seem really happy. Yeah, so like we were just being judgmental assholes, essentially.
They have that wonderful moment in this too, where they all, especially like when Harry makes that crappy comment during the ceremony, and then they see like the real love that Nathan Lane's character and Bitsy have for each other. They all just like, they have to check each other and check themselves. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no, that's what, like, I feel like they got there because they were so shitty in the beginning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyways, go. Sorry, Leanne, I deterred us. What were you?
Oh, no, that was it.
I think it's interesting. Something we've talked about too on the show is how it's a show created and like basically show run by a gay man, Michael Patrick King. And yet all of the gay representation is so self-loathing and self-hating. It's like all the gay characters are super cartoony, conventionally very unattractive, kind of dorky. Like Stanford is such a dorky character. We were just saying how interesting it was that like the person who created the show, who's making all these characters, like reflects gay. The only gay representation is like so kind of like lame and dorky.
But I think like we were saying before, like, I think comedy was just that back then. Like, if you look at like Martin, the show Martin, if you ever watched that,
I loved
like
Martin.
His characters were like, you know,
Shaniqua
a black
or something.
Lady,
yeah.
Shaniqua or like, a you know, or a it was just like the most worst stereotypes of like black people. And it was funny.
You know what, though? It's like that's one thing, though. Well, yeah. I mean, I think Martin was kind of a genius, honestly. Like, I think the show I haven't watched it since I was a kid, but he was pretty.
I haven't watched it.
He was pretty
I
talented,
loved it
though,
when
you know,
it was on.
But he seemed to be like really going there. Right. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Where this seems more like it's supposed to be grounded and real or something, like.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do agree with you. I think back then, anyone who wasn't white, anyone who wasn't straight, anyone who wasn't thin was like fair game for like, you're gross, we're making fun of you. Like,
What do you think of, because we have some new men this season. We got Harry for Charlotte and we got Berger.
Marcus.
And I was just, what were we saying?
Marcus Sky? Too for Stanford.
Oh yeah, Marcus. But we don't
I know
really
he's
know
marginal,
much.
But yeah.
He's, well, he doesn't need to be marginal, but he just doesn't say much.
That's true.
He just gets cheese grated on his abs.
Yeah, he gets cheese grated on his abs and then we move on. But what is your read on, well, I'm really curious what you think about Berger. I think he's one of the more complicated characters on this show.
Yeah.
I'm just curious what your feelings are, like what you think they were going for.
Berger, it like has left a lasting impression on me. Even thinking back to watching it the first time, there was something like very appealing to him. He was like, I don't know what it was, but he was different than like, say, Aiden. I feel like Aiden.
Definitely.
I feel like Aiden played, I guess maybe it was also the actor, because like Aiden, the guy that played Aiden was like an actor. And then the guy that plays Berger is like, in comedy, and he just has this tone to him that just like, I don't know, it just, he feels almost, Berger felt almost out of place in the Sex and the City world for me, I think.
Oh, fascinating.
And I think that's why he's so different to me.
Do you think that is? Like, because we kind of were talking about this last episode, like, we were saying that they're very different, Aiden and Berger. What do you think it is that makes him out of place?
I know how the actor is in real life, that like he would never be in Carrie's world. I think he'd never like hang out with Carrie, or I think he like, I just don't think that him and Carrie would connect in any way. And
you
maybe
think
I'm
Berger's
just
too
like,
cool
hung
for
up
her
on,
kind of in a way.
Yeah. Like I think he'd be like part of like the grungy sort of New York that's like really laid back and just like, you know, that their past wouldn't cross her. If they did, she wouldn't give him like a second look. And maybe I'm just like tainted by Office Space.
Well, now I think it's a good point because I think that Berger feels very Brooklyn. He feels like successful, like Williamsburg-y kind of. But when they're like, oh, he has a Hamptons house, I'm like, wait, yeah. Berger has a Hamptons house? Like, does he even care about the Hamptons? Like, there's that yeah. part of it where it's like, he feels like this kind of, like you're saying, like grungy, like indie rock writer guy
yes.
who like hangs out in coffee shops and like we end up meeting his friends in season six. We get a glimpse of who his friends are and they're kind of that vibe too. And you're just kind of like, yeah, there's something. They try to like kind of fit him into this, like
exactly.
he's a Manhattan guy. And it's like, he's not a Manhattan yeah. guy. The show just doesn't acknowledge that Brooklyn exists.
Yeah. 100%.
So it's like this really weird mashup person.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Could I ask just cause I just truly wasn't aware of New York when the show was airing in this way, yeah. but like, was Brooklyn what Brooklyn is today when the show
no,
was airing?
Brooklyn was like a lame place, I think.
Okay.
I think it was, yeah. I mean, it was definitely like starting to.
Okay.
Like Williamsburg was definitely around because I was going to Williamsburg.
But not in the early like, 2000s, were you?
I guess not. Maybe
like toward 2010s, well,
mid,
right?
Mid, like 2006. Not that it much longer like after, but it's definitely not what it is now. It's not what yeah. it is now.
Totally. Yeah. Cause I almost think of like older, like Lower East Side or like East Village sort of stuff would be a little bit more
yeah.
Berger back even, in that time.
They don't even acknowledge that. Like they're yeah. like, oh, he like lives on Delancey. I'd be like, oh, okay. That paints a picture. But like, they kind of are like, no, he has a Hamptons house and he wants to go shopping at Prada and all this stuff. And you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, it's confusing. It's just confusing.
Who is your favorite guy on the show, Leanne? Who did you think was cute that you liked of all the guys? If you liked any of them.
I think I liked Aiden. But I think that's because like I would choose him. I think he's so down to earth and like and he has that cabin and like that would be my dream.
Right. Carrie was like, this is disgusting.
It was like yeah. so bizarre.
And then he had a babe. Oh.
No, that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
We're
yes.
cool.
Yeah, you can
so
say
that's the next episode.
So, yeah, that's the whole shebang, you know, for me, I think. So I think I'm
you want a cabin and a baby. So far, you have a baby. Now
a cabin and
a cabin.
Baby. Yeah, I have cabin fever. I'm stuck in this.
Cool, there you go. Same thing.
There you go, girl.
Oh, my God. Well, okay. Well, do we have any last questions for Leanne before we...
Leanne, do you have a favorite Sex in the City episode of all time?
Great question.
More
of a memorable one even.
I mean, everyone remembers when Carrie. I'm ruining next.
It's okay.
No, you're not. It's
everyone's
okay.
Everyone's seen
okay.
it a million times.
Everyone's seen it. Yeah.
Okay. When Carrie gets broken up with on a post-it note. I mean, that is.
Oh my God.
That happened to one of the writers
so
in the room.
Bad.
It did.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
Officially, mm-hmm. We know this.
Yeah,
it's confirmed.
I looked it up on trivia today. That came from a story from the room.
I had a feeling. I'm so glad you're confirming it.
That makes me feel so good. Is that bad? Like, I've played in my mind, like, what would that be like? What would that feel like? That's so crazy. And the fact that it's real is just like, ugh, it's very satisfying. I'm so sorry to her or him.
Probably her. It's a bunch of women.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's so crazy.
But sometimes stuff is so, that's what makes the show work so well is
yeah.
like, you can tell that they just have really great like brainstorming sessions where people just mm-hmm. tell all of their stories because
yeah.
it gets so specific. And I think that's why it resonates with people. And you're like, oh, mm-hmm. you know that someone said, oh, this thing happened to me. And then it just made it into the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's why it works.
I have to say we have a lot of listeners who are, you know, aspiring comedians and aspiring writers. So we really appreciate you sharing your writing journey with us,
yeah,
your TV
course.
Career journey with us, and I'm sure aspiring mothers and wives. So thank you for giving us all of your deep dish pizza secrets.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I
absolutely
Thanks for
loved
having
it.
Me.
So we end each episode with a segment called I'm Horny For. Sex in the City is obviously a very horny show. So we end each episode by sharing what we are horny for. Rose, what are you horny for right now?
I have a bunch, but I just don't remember sometimes which ones I did. So if I already did this one, I'll do another one. But did I already okay. recommend the Paris Hilton documentary on YouTube?
No, talk about it.
Okay, there's an amazing Paris Hilton documentary on YouTube. And I didn't know anything about Paris Hilton. I honestly, you know, it's COVID. I'm so desperate for content that if somebody says watch this thing, I'll watch it. It was absolutely riveting. I know it sounds crazy because she's like a millionaire blonde white girl who's pretty in a conventional sense. And so why should we feel bad for her? But I felt terrible for her. Her family was so bad to her. What happened to her was so terrible. And this doesn't spoil anything, but like it really puts things into context. Like it really helps you understand how sexist our society is because she dealt with a horrible experience in her teenage years. And, you know, she was so traumatized that she ended up being in a bunch of abusive relationships with way older guys. When she was still a teenager, an older guy kind of coerced her into making a sex tape that got leaked, which should have been child porn. He should have gone to jail forever.
Yes.
But instead of him coming out and looking bad, instead of him being the one who was embarrassed, everyone made fun of her.
She's a slut whore.
Everyone watched it. Adult males made fun of her on late night. It is so disgusting that she was basically raped on fucking film and it was like made fun of her. It's like everyone who took a crack at that should be fucking embarrassed and apologize.
Every person, every woman, I don't know if I can make this sweeping generalization. Pretty much every woman who was made fun of in the media for being dumb or slutty or whatever it is, you later learn they were horribly abused or it was like they were groomed or they like Lorena Bobbitt. Like we were like, oh my God, the woman who cut off the penis. It's like, dude, she was tortured in that relationship.
Yeah.
It was not funny. And then it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm not defending, you know, I'm not saying that like women don't have a role in their situation, whatever, but it is crazy how these things that just sort of blow up into this media sensation, we're just like, oh yeah, like Monica Lewinsky, you're just like, oh my God, like she just loves sucking presidential dick. And you're like, come on. Like it's so
she was
much more
disrespectful.
Complicated
she was
than
years
that.
Old. Yeah.
She was a baby and he was the president and he like,
I know.
I'm sorry. Like, it's just so sad. And I remember in the 90s just being like, oh my God, Monica Lewinsky. Like, it was just, she's just a punchline. And
well,
it's like,
also, if you,
no one talks about the other side of it.
Another thing is, too, I hate to admit, but if you do watch the Paris Hilton sex tape, which I did, it's actually really sad because she's like not enjoying it. She's not even pretending to enjoy it. She seems really insecure. And the fact that people were taking shots at like a teenage girl. It's like, what is wrong with everybody? So it's a good watch to be like, the media needs to be like full of women because it's just crazy the way people treat women like whores without any kind of context or empathy, you know?
No, there's none. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's easier to just take a cheap shot at someone versus like looking at all sides of a situation. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's a must watch. It's really interesting.
I didn't finish it, but I got 3/4 of the way through and I thought it was really good. Leanne, what are you horny for this week?
So mine is very similar to Rose's, but it's true because I don't get to watch a lot of TV and I watched the Blackpink K-pop documentary on Netflix.
Oh my God, how is it?
And I've always been fascinated and I watched it and it was very satisfying. And immediately after I watched it, I've just been looking up their videos and their dance videos.
Oh, I
want to
watch.
And I'm just like obsessed.
Oh, I want to watch it.
It's so interesting. I didn't know like one of them is from New Zealand, one's from Australia and one's from Thailand. And it just it's just like I didn't know how that world works. And it was just really interesting.
Oh, great. OK, cool. Well, I guess I'm going to do a TV one also or a whatever. non-book medium. I'm horny for Dave on FX. I watched the whole season. Have you guys
seen it?
Yes, I'm
It's so good.
It's really good.
I did not think I was going to enjoy it because I didn't really know Little Dickie's music. I kind of always thought he was just like a YouTube star. I just didn't know anything. And then everyone's like, no, it's really good. It's really good. And I also just kind of thought it was going to be really bro-y, which it is, but not in not in a way that takes you out of it as a woman. It's just really fucking funny and good. It's a great show.
It's really good.
Yeah, I got to watch it.
The showrunner or his co-creator was Jeff Schaefer.
It is Jeff Schaefer. Yeah. Because, I kind of was like, this show is so funny. Like, it is so joke dense.
Yeah.
But it's like this really kind of gritty tone.
I gotta watch it.
But it's very hard hitting jokes. And I was like, but I also think that Little Dickie is just really funny. So, but it makes sense that they have like a hard hitting, like network comedy joke machine type working on it because you can feel it.
And
he's
also
so good.
is like Dave is refreshingly self-deprecating. I thought he 100%. Would just be like, my dick's in your face. Like even the like yes. poster is like his him and yes. his knee undies. And I was
right,
like,
right,
no
right.
way.
It felt a little yeah. aggressive. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But then you're but like, it's actually, all. Yeah, not that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that about him. Well, I didn't realize how self-deprecating he is.
I have some things to watch. I'm going to watch the K-pop doc and I'm going to watch the show.
Hell yeah.
I know. I want to watch the
Paris Hilton. My third time saying hell yeah today. Apparently that's my new catchphrase.
Where's the Paris Hilton doc? Is that Netflix?
YouTube.
It's on YouTube.
YouTube. Okay.
Do they get into, in the Paris Hilton doc, her like bling ring stuff at all?
Not really.
Okay. I'm so intrigued by that element of it. Because I watched the movie recently and I'm like...
Oh, is it based on her?
Well, she was... The bling ring stole from her house many times, but then she also she let the production shoot there. So it's like this weird thing. Oh, she got robbed and then Sofia Coppola directs the movie about the little robbery ring and Paris Hilton let them use her home as the actual as a set for the movie, which is like such an interesting I'm so interested in that calculus, like it seemed like such an odd choice to make to me, which I'm just like fascinated by how
it was
the decision making there.
Interesting. I mean, I hope this doesn't give away too much, but in the documentary you're in Paris Hilton's house and she just has like an ungodly amount of stuff, like too many things, like, you know, too many pieces of jewelry, too many shoes. It's like not impressive. It's like claustrophobic.
No, it is.
Is it cluttered or is it?
It's well organized, but
it's like well organized clutter.
But if you didn't, I'm not going to say why, but if you don't understand what her trauma is, you could just be like, God, why does she have so much stuff? But when I don't want to spoil anything for listeners or for you, Leanne, who's going to watch it, because there's an explanation for her need for things that is actually absolutely heartbreaking. And it really puts like a different lens onto why she has so many things.
That's so interesting.
It's a really good documentary.
It's a really empathetic documentary for sure.
I do need to finish it.
Okay.
Okay. Well, this was a wonderful episode. Thank you so much, Leanne, for joining us.
And
where can people find you on social media?
Sure. I guess Twitter, at Leanne_Bowen. And that's it.
Is there anything that you want people to watch that you're
is private, huh?
Anything you want people to watch?
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
Watch Ted Lasso. It's really good.
It is really good.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was a wonderful bridge episode. Au revoir, season 5 next week. Ooh. Season 6, baby. Holy
Can
shit!
Can I just say I loved Carrie's hair in the season. I just love it.
I actually was just thinking that it gets really good in the episode that the end of season 5.
Yeah.
And the beginning of season 6 is gorgeous.
Her hair when it's like in that bouffant bump, when she's in that, like, it's almost like she pulled up a skirt around her boobs. Like that dress is like not a dress. It just looks like she yanked a skirt up. I like
the pregnancy outfits were crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I love them. They're so good. I love like blousey shit. So even pregnancy aside, I'm like, I love that.
Yeah.
Just like that there's room to breathe.
Patricia Fields is a damn genius.
Damn genius. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys so much for listening and have a great day.
Thank you, Leanne. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Couldn't Help But Wonder. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CHBWPod and follow my co-host Rose Cerno on Insta and Twitter at Rose Cerno. And please follow my co-host Jamie at ReallyJamieLee on Instagram and at TheJamieLee on Twitter. And please rate, review, subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app if you're nasty. It helps us, it helps you, it helps everyone.
You nasty.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.